Hey guys, I am super excited for my guest today, Daniel Libeskind. He has built games, he's built companies, he was an investment banker and a VC investor. He's been passionately building new ways for people to experience the internet and VR platforms. He's building like a real-time internet, which has led to the company Topia that he has today, and we're gonna talk about that here in a second. So before we dive into that conversation, because you're listening to this podcast, I know that you're interested and curious about NFTs and Web3. At the end of September, I'm organizing NFT Seattle, the first major Web3 and NFT conference in Seattle. And Tom Bilyeu is going to be the main speaker, which I'm pumped about. He literally on YouTube walked me through setting up my MetaMask, transferring money, crypto into my MetaMask wallet, minting my first ever NFT, which came from his collection, the Impact Theory Founders Key. And he's been somebody who is majorly influential and impactful in my life as almost like a virtual business mentor well before Web3 was ever even on my radar. So I'm excited to share him and all the other amazing speakers with you, with the rest of Seattle. And it is also going to be awesome to meet some of my listeners in Seattle. So I'm stoked about that. And I've got a discount code or a discount for you guys. So you're going to get over $60 off the VIP tickets. And there's only about 50 of those left. So I would do that sooner than later. But there's a link in the show notes. So check the notes, click the link, make it happen. The event is September 30th through October 1st. So lock that in on your calendar. Go to the show notes, click the link if you're able to make it out here, and get some tickets and hang out with a bunch of epic people at NFT Seattle. So that being said, let's get into today's episode. Daniel Libeskind, thanks so much for joining me. Excited to chat with you today.
Yeah, excited to be here, Mark. Thanks for having me on.
For sure. So Daniel is the CEO and founder of Topia. Do you want to share a little bit about what you guys do, what you're working on?
Yeah, so the easiest way to understand what we're doing is we're trying to bring the experience of being in person, right? So you might have 1,000 people at an in-person gathering, but you're really only connecting with the people that are closest to you. You're talking to them, then you can move into another conversation just by moving your feet, and you move into another conversation, then you can move to another one. And the context around you, if you're at a festival, that's a very different context of being in a bar or being in a business meeting. And so in Topia, we make it so that you can make these really customized, immersive spaces that give you context for conversation. And then you can have thousands of people in a single world, and you're connecting over encrypted audio and video to anybody that's close to you. And then you can click and move around between conversations and sort of self-facilitate your own experience.
Love it. And something I'm excited to like chat with you and dive in more into like what you're doing and kind of the ethos behind it and your whole vision and that kind of stuff. But something that I've said a number of times, and I feel like just in listening to past conversations that you've had, it's like in building community and in building different platforms moving forward, the companies and the brands that do the best at facilitating the best human connection are the ones that are going to win. And I feel like that's a big part of your mission, is like driving the human connection. Like that's at the core of what I feel like you're building. Hey, are you interested in marketing, community building, NFTs and crypto, social media, and the metaverse? It's all moving fast and it's easy to be overwhelmed. No one knows the future and no one knows exactly what the intersection of these things will look like. My name is Mark Robinson and I do my best to break it down as we connect with leaders in the space and figure it out together. Thanks for listening as we laugh, learn, and lean into the future of digital marketing.
One way that you even just see that emulated or you see that displayed in Topia is that we have avatars, but they're not the focal point, right? The focal point is actually the other humans. You see them on essentially video chat, and the topies, which are what we call the avatars, are a personification. They're an embodiment. So you have physical presence within this space, and you can move throughout the space. But the emphasis is really on the human to human connection, seeing the whites of each other's eyes, you know, really doing the things that we evolved as humans to do to build relationships. And the point of the platform in many ways is to form memories with people based on shared experiences, shared social experiences, and strengthen the bonds between individuals within a community.
What do you feel like is the problem that you're solving if you were to compare it to, I don't know if you would compare it to like Zoom or if you'd more compare it to a social media platform or if you'd compare it to a metaversal platform or whatnot, but like what do you do differently and what's the problem you're solving for?
Yeah, you know, there are problems with all of those different mediums. There are problems with Topia as well, right? It's not perfect for everything, for every single situation. But in Zoom, one of the challenges is it's one to many, really. One person at a time is talking. If you have a 100-person event in Zoom, one person at a time gets to talk. Everybody else is just passively sitting there listening. And it's actually more of a webinar. You can have breakout rooms, but that requires a facilitator. It requires, you really have no agency of that usually. And it needs to be heavily facilitated. So in something like Topia, it's not one to many, it's many to many. You are talking to other people. And even if we do have broadcast functionality, so you can have a panel where people are speaking to everybody within a specific space, we call it private zone, or speaking to the entire world. But even while that's happening, so think of like Clubhouse, right? We have that kind of functionality. But instead of everybody that's in the audience just not being able to interact with each other, they can actually talk to each other during this panel, during this broadcast. So very different than a Clubhouse or a Zoom that way. Interesting. And then, you know, when you compare it to like a, I think the other example you gave was like a gaming. What was your second example? I can't remember.
Like social media, which you mentioned media. Clubhouse, there was Zoom, and then there was like a metaversal, like if people have used different metaverses, been in a metaverse world. Yeah, that was the third one.
You know, social media is asynchronous, right? It's not really real time. And it's very polarizing. There's an algorithm that's sorting through the written text that is asynchronously put out there that's feeding you information that is going to be engaging for you, which usually confirms your existing biases. It's also not really human. You're hiding behind a username, and it's very easy to troll. It's easy to have toxic, spiraling out of control conversations. You know, for anybody that, as an example, works in a company that works remote, and sometimes you'll find that text-based asynchronous conversation can get a little out of hand because people may not understand the context of what they're saying. There might be like weird text-based fights that happen. And the way to solve it is to come together synchronously. Let's just hop on a call and actually talk about this. And then it solves it, right? And so you're missing that human context. You're missing all the body language. You're missing, you know, a lot of the nuances of how humans evolved to actually communicate with each other in social media. And then, you know, other metaverse platforms that are often avatar based, you know, they don't have, there's not really that human. You don't really know who you're even connecting with. And so video, we think, is really, really critical to having real human contexts. But you can turn your video off in Topia, and you can be audio only. You can even turn your audio off. So, you know, you have the flexibility to have whatever kind of experience. And as a world owner, you can actually control those settings. So you can make it so people can't turn their video off or can't turn their audio off. And you get to craft whatever experience you're trying to craft there. And, you know, there are a lot of video games that don't even have audio. And there's no real like spatial context. There's no real human to human connection at all. It's like you're writing in a text chat while your avatar is just moving around the world. And, you know, that's a game, right? That's not really about human connection.
Sure. So one of the first major events, correct me if I'm wrong, that you did was Burning Man. You did Burning Man a couple years, right? With like 25,000 people in Topia in place of, you know, due to COVID and that kind of stuff. How early on in your platform was that? And are you a burner? Like, have you been to Burning Man before?
I have. I'm a 6-year burner, planning on going this year.
Okay.
In person. Nice. Did not go during the Renegade year. But we were co-hosting virtual Burning Man during that. And the first one in 2020 was about 5 months after the first line of code. We actually had our first public event 3 weeks after the first line of code. You know, I'm a rapid prototyper. That's kind of my specialization. We can get into my background if you want, but, you know, building in public, right. Launching as fast as you possibly can, and then iterating and working and building with your community is something that, you know, I felt really strongly about. So first event, 3 weeks, Burning Man, 5 months. It was a crazy scramble to build all sorts of feature systems leading up to that. And even things like moderation and make sure it was going to be safe. And, you know, it was the biggest event by far that we had done. And from that, you know, it was an organic flywheel. It was quite interesting as you think about marketing. It was actually a marketing event in many ways. All of our many of the power users that we even still have, the big companies that started using Topia, like Asana, had their IPO party a couple months after Burning Man. You know, they found us at the Burning Man experience, and they were blown away by it, and it like perfectly fit whatever their use case was. And then we did it again last year in 2021. And the platform was way better built out. And so, you know, it was an interesting and kind of stark contrast.
You talked about building in public, and then you also mentioned we threw this event, which that in itself was good marketing because there's a good product. There's a quote that I heard recently, which is, people who do sales do it because they don't know how to market, and people who do marketing do it because they don't know how to build a good product. So do you subscribe to that? Like, does just building a good product, if you build it, they'll come? Or what has been your marketing strategy coupled with that? What's the right answer? What have you seen?
Really good question. So we, for the first year and a half, really had no marketing. We had no salespeople. We had what we refer to now as our distribution team. We had nobody on it. There was no distribution team. We were really focused on just building a great product, building a great architecture. And that actually has paid huge dividends for us now. But in the early days, you know, it was all just an organic flywheel of people. And thankfully, our product is the kind of product where you have an event, you bring a bunch of people, right? And then all those people are now exposed to the product. And some of them go and build their own world, bring more people in. And so that sort of flywheel is just inherent in a platform like this. Mm-hmm. But we, you know, we really didn't do any marketing or sales until about 6 months ago. And that really began because we realized that we had something like 2,000 companies every month coming to our marketing site. And we weren't contacting anybody. We weren't reaching out. We weren't even really understanding what people were using the platform for. We've had something now like 7,000 events over the last 2 years. And we only know what a fraction of them were, right? We just had no insights. We really weren't spending much time on it. We were really focused on talking to customers. How do we improve it? How do we make it better? How do we make this really scalable architecture? We invented a technology called, it's an existing technology called peer-to-peer WebRTC, but we invented a use case within these kind of metaverse worlds, and we're very unique in that. That took a lot of our energy, but now it's put us in a very unique position. But you know, it was a lot of, you know, I think we had a team of eight until about 8 months ago, and we were all product design and engineering.
Okay. And that got you 7,000 events or close to it, I guess it sounds like, which is awesome. So if you build the product right, you can do it without focusing heavily on marketing. If you'd focused heavily on marketing and didn't have a product to back it up, then that would probably have not been super effective.
I think there's a lot of ways to be successful. I've heard of products that are not very good products, but that have amazing sales teams, and they get acquired for $1 billion somehow, and you know, nobody really understands. But you know, I'm very much a product person. Our team is very product oriented, and in our case, it worked because our kind of product had this inherent flywheel. I would say though that, you know, we definitely could have juiced it. We could have gotten more eyeballs faster, and this whole thing has happened kind of like, you know, we started Topia prior to Meta, you know, Facebook changing its name. This idea of the metaverse wasn't really even there, and it's kind of exploded in our backyard. And you know, we could have gone faster. It would have sacrificed some of the architecture and product stuff that's really exciting right now. But that was the trade-off that we actually quite intentionally decided to opt for.
Yeah. Yep. Makes sense. You talked about building in public. And so can you share, like, how has your experience been building in public? And I'm also curious in that too, if there are challenges, because sometimes the community says, hey, we want this. And you're like, oh, that's not really aligned with my vision or not necessarily what I want, right? Do you open yourself up to that? Or yeah, what's your experience been in doing it that way?
Just like everything, there's pros and cons. And building in public is really wonderful. You wind up building a lot of the right things, but to your point, you get a lot of advice, right? You get a lot of opinions. People also, one of the big things in product is, what are the problems that people have? And do you have a solution for that? Or can you build a solution? That's part of product market fit, right? Is building solutions to actual problems, but identifying what's a real problem and what's not is somewhat challenging. The other problem is that when you're building in public, whatever you do, people come to expect. And especially as an early stage company, you need to have the ability to be really agile and change and adapt and discover who is actually our market here, right? And sometimes it's not the first people that use the platform. Sometimes it is. But you know, when people get ingrained, you know, when they've been using something the way it is for 6 months, and then you change it because obviously we need to change this thing, even if they get why you change it, it's still disruptive to whatever their process is. You know, we have world builders, we have event planners, we have a lot of people that are actually building businesses on top of this platform and this technology. That when we change even something that seems sort of small and like we just need to change it, we need to be really thoughtful about how we do that, how we message it, how much heads up we give to people so that they can change the way they're pricing to their customers, for example. Right. And so that can, it's just a, you know, it's a double-edged sword in some ways, or, you know, two sides of the coin or whatever the euphemism you want to use is.
Yeah. Right. When you think about marketing, have there been key marketing events? Like you mentioned Burning Man, that was a big marketing event, 25,000 people. That was a lot of exposure that it sounds like turned into some, you know, advocates or like super power users, right? That, have there been key events from a marketing perspective where it's like, okay, these three events or these three things that we did, really took things to the next level. Like what have you found to be the most key, factors in effective marketing for you?
Great question. For us, events are really important. So even in the early days, there were events pre-Burning Man that just had a huge impact and a lot of people came and were kind of blown away. And that became those became our generation two of users, right? And then a generation three of users and communities that spawned that brought people in. So it's been very event-based for us in many ways, are sort of like quasi-marketing. But again, because we weren't really a marketing team, we would have events, we wouldn't even really capture any footage. We wouldn't make a sizzle reel. We didn't leverage them in any meaningful way.
Yeah.
And that has changed. So we just had an NFT event or a hybrid event a couple weeks ago for Blondish, who's a DJ.
Yeah.
She has a nonprofit called Bye Bye Plastic. And she had, we had a hybrid event where there were something like 2,000 people in person at a pool party. And she's DJing there. And we have a few hundred people in a digital environment. And it's a digital twin, what's being referred to as a digital twin. And so it's kind of a replica of the in-person environment. And we had a terminal set up. So it's hybrid because people in person were able to come up to this terminal and interact with people digitally. Blondish is streaming into the metaverse. People are talking in the metaverse experience. And the only way you can even hear it if you're in person is going up to the terminal and listening to it. And then people digitally are able to see the live streams of the in-person and actually talk to people that are there that come to the terminals. We've done this with Product Hunt as well, various other clients. And so, you know, those kinds of things are really interesting showcases. We actually have footage of this thing. We're making a couple sizzle reels. You know, it was about 2 weeks ago. So,
yeah.
You know, that's the kind of marketing we're doing now is real events, real use cases, people being excited, people having fun. I think we're trying to do less of the more traditional, just like ad-based marketing, for example, and trying to actually create really cool, really unique, engaging content and then figure out ways to amplify that.
Yeah, that's really cool. I like the hybrid mix and finding ways to integrate it that is bigger than just like a purely metaverse event or whatever, right? Like, but allowing other people to plug into it. I think that's really cool.
Yeah. We also do things, you know, so one of the ways you can use Topia is, or one of the things you can use it for is demand gen, is marketing itself. And so, you know, like every company or every brand or every person even has their own website, right? Everybody should have their own metaverse experience that is instead of just like a static directory of content that people can consume in isolation by themselves, mostly. Even YouTube is kind of that, right? You're watching all these videos by yourself. Instead, in Topia, you can make social experiences, social journeys through content, through a replica of your website, through all of your different content. And so we've started using Topia that way ourselves for marketing. We throw unconference events. We have demand gen events. You know, we're teaching people different skills. We're teaching them about the metaverse. And a lot of that is actually top of funnel.
Interesting. Is there a big enough user base? Like if I was going to go and jump on Topia, I'm curious what the adoption has been, right? Because people are somewhat resistant sometimes of entering the metaverse and all that. Like they don't want to go so digital. They don't want to lose the human interaction, even though I know your purpose is to facilitate that and bridge the gap and enhance human connection. But are people adopting it? Like, because this was built in some ways out of COVID. So now that COVID is mostly behind us, like is the adoption continuing? Are people still finding value in like continuing to invest more into this like digital ecosystem?
Yeah, you know, it's been interesting. The idea of having just a huge user base that's in here all the time, that's trying to find communities, there is some of that. I wouldn't say it's a huge population. What often actually happens is communities come and they bring their people, right? And now they're creating persistent community spaces. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, people will discover other communities as well. But, you know, we're not, what one of our evolutions is away from just like the tail community of tiny little communities that then that think that, you know, there's like five of them and they think they're going to come in and now they're going to have 100,000 person community.
Yeah.
That's not really how it works. Even, you know, really at any platform. So, you know, for us, it's getting big communities, getting big brands, getting companies. They bring tons and tons of people who then trickle into other places. You know, we have a directory of stuff and events, worlds and events that are going on. But, you know, for us in many ways, actually, you know, I don't know if you've heard me talk about this before, but I actually had a VR platform for 2 years before the pandemic. And it was essentially, the idea was to build like the WordPress of VR experiences, of like social interactive VR experiences. And when the pandemic hit, I scrapped all of that because the need for this was right now and nobody has headsets, right? And
right.
Even if they do, you're not going to stay in a headset for multiple hours. And it's not really human connection because you don't see other actual humans. It's just all avatar based. Adoption is just pretty low. So scrapped it, built it browser based. So, you know, Topia doesn't need a VR headset. It's just a link. It's through your browser, super easy to access. Mm-hmm. And we're not like a hardcore video game like we were talking about before. You know, the avatar is a personification. It's an embodiment in the digital world, so you can actually move around. But we've shied away from making it something that's, or not, I wouldn't say shied away. I guess we've very intentionally made it as accessible as possible. And so even in a post-pandemic world, the world is increasingly remote, right? And people are working remote. Mm-hmm. What you're finding a lot of times now, just one of our use cases that that companies are using this for, is if everybody's remote or you have a hybrid workforce or whatnot, if your employees don't feel like they're actually part of a community, then they feel like they're mercenaries, right? And if they get a better opportunity, they're just going to leave because they don't really care about the people.
Right.
The reason people don't churn and they stay and they're willing to really grind through and work the extra mile is because they're part of a community, right? They feel like they're part of something bigger than themselves. And you need something like a real-time community platform like Topia to actually strengthen the bonds between individuals that way. Otherwise, you know, we're all just individuals floating in a stream and just, you know, we don't really feel like we're part of something.
Yeah, 100%. I think that's a huge problem or a challenge that companies are facing with the remote workforce. I think with the rise of Twitter spaces too, if you think about like in the NFT space, I know you just did a NFT event, but a big part of marketing for that is like building community. And a big way to do that is Twitter's where everybody's at. And you jump on these Twitter spaces, but you're just listening to people and it's like a faceless thing. You can go on somebody's Twitter and see their profile picture, right? But you don't get the face-to-face. You can't talk to people. Like you said, if there's, you know, if you're in a room with 1,000 people, you can sit there and listen to the five speakers, but you don't get, unless they accept you and maybe you're waiting 45 minutes just to get some stage time, but that's not even, you want to connect with somebody else in the audience or whatever. And you're like, why would anybody use that other than like in place of Topia, other than the fact that it sounds like you've got an events directory, but there's just obviously a mass adoption and millions of users that are jumping on Twitter. So you can go there and connect with a ton of people. But I would personally much rather use Topia than listen to people talk without seeing their facial expressions, without like looking at somebody face to face, right? Like that seems way worse than the Topia experience.
Well, I mean, imagine the in-person parallel of Twitter spaces. It'd be like you go to an in-person event, there's a few hundred people there, you put on a blindfold and you aren't allowed to talk to anybody. You just have to listen to the people on the podium, mm-hmm. right? I've been to events kind of like that. Anytime you're in an event and like people are just talking at you the whole time and you can't talk to anybody around you, it's kind of like, what's the point of even being
yeah.
here? That's how I feel.
Yeah. It's like when you live stream to an event, every time I've bought live stream access to an event that I wasn't able to go to, I don't even like, you don't go to events because of the actual content. You go because of the networking. That's 90% of the value anyway. And your platform actually allows for that versus otherwise it's just like a one-dimensional, you plug in, you listen, and that's the extent of it. There's no networking that can happen beyond like the Zoom breakouts and some of that stuff. But that, you know, I get the value
yep.
of Topia. It makes sense. Yeah, no, that's really cool. You talked a little bit about your background with the VR. Do you want to share some of the other things that you've built? I know you've built like 30 products. You've built a lot of different things. You want to share a little bit more about that?
It's a lot. Well, when I was a kid, I built games. I very much consider myself a gamer. I built games. I had a passion for it. I was like, this is going to be my life. I'm just going to be a game builder. But you know, somewhere along the way, I was like, you know what? Instead of just building games, I want to build things that people love that are really useful to them and do this entrepreneurial hero's journey. And so the origin of that for me was, let me learn how to actually build a company, right? And I had to build games. I can code, but let me learn how to build companies. And so I went into investment banking. I was there for Lehman Brothers. I was at Lehman Brothers for the crash, went to Barclays, and then was a late stage VC investor at Summit Partners, and left that in about 2012, I believe, to get back into coding and just building things. And so my first metaverse platform was actually in 2014. It was called Body. It was a way for fitness instructors to create their own virtual fitness studios, set their own branding, create their own ecosystem, and then teach live interactive classes where they could see the participants and participants could see each other. And, you know, it was this idea of making the internet more real time, more synchronous, more human oriented. And if you're taking fitness classes by yourself, just watching a one-way video, it's not very fun. It's not very engaging. There's no accountability, right? But if I'm taking it with my sister who's in Chicago and I'm in LA and our instructor is in New York and can see us both, that instructor can actually help us with our form. And I have accountability with my sister to actually show up to the class and we can see that we're both doing it. It's kind of fun. So that was the idea there. And you know, it was a bit ahead of its time. You know, the term metaverse didn't even really get popularized until 2020 or 2021 or whatever Meta changed its name. But you know, I've always been really passionate about the idea of the real-time internet. The idea of, you know, VR, I've been a big VR user. I've also been a blockchain developer. You know, I've been a Bitcoiner and then an Ethereum developer. The idea of decentralization is really interesting to me. So, you know, in my mind, the internet's on this evolutionary curve. And so where is it going? It's going a few different ways that are probably going to intersect. And so as an entrepreneur, I've always been really focused on trying to build things that are really useful to people that solve problems using the arc of technology and of new protocols like WebRTC, which is what Topia is based on, which is web real-time communication. And so I had a VR platform. I built 25, I think is the real number, different applications, both for myself. I had a dev shop, you know, for clients, and got to be a rapid prototyper so that when the pandemic hit and I realized a use case, you know, and I had a vision for a thing, you know, I could build it in 3 weeks and actually launch and have an event.
Love it. You mentioned there's a number of different ways the future of the internet can go. Do you want to share what your vision for that looks like?
Well, the two that everybody talk about are this idea of Web3, which we'll touch on in a second. The other one is the idea of the evolution of the internet from something that's just asynchronous, like email, right, where I send an email and then I get one back sometime later. Then you had video conferencing, you have voice over IP. Those are more real time, right? More like being in person or more like having a phone call with somebody. And, you know, the natural progression of that is to make it more immersive, more engaging, be able to have context. We actually saw this with video games, right? Multiplayer games, MMORPGs, but those were for nerds like me, right? They were for gamers. So to bring that to the masses, you need to make it less of just this immersive game and something that's more accessible. And so that was kind of a no-brainer in my mind. I actually got told, this is a funny story, when I was building my first, what is now Metaverse platform in 2014, I met with a very high up product developer at a big tech company who told me that the synchronous internet is not a thing, that I should stop trying to do anything real time. The future of the internet is more asynchronicity because there's more leverage in it, which is true. But you know, it was kind of disheartening at the time. Honestly, this is a pretty famous product manager, and you know, he turned out not to be correct about that, I think, and his company is now going headfirst into this real-time internet. But you know, that is a path, and then Web3 is also really fascinating, and that's going from the internet 2.0 of everything is centralized. All data is centralized. If you're going to Riverside FM, right? Everything in Riverside is controlled in Riverside's database. That is centralized. It's closed. They have all the content. They have you know, all of the data in there. And if you wanted to bring your content from Riverside into some other platform, you'd probably have to actually just start from scratch on the other platform, right? That is the centralized web 2. Web 3 is the evolution towards more shared backends, more public databases. And so if you create something in a public database, then you're able to actually use that data, because it's, you know, it's stored in an accessible way publicly. You're able to use that data across many different platforms. And so that's really empowering for creators. And it's really empowering for communities, because as a community, you can create your community once. You know, again, think about like Facebook. You create a Facebook community, you can't just bring that with you to meetup.com, right? You need to actually create a new community in meetup.com, and you try to bring people over. But you know, now with Web3, you can actually create the community once in a shared backend, and then platforms will have to be create interoperability. They'll have to create plugins to this public database, because that's where all the creators and communities are going to go, because way better for them. And so, and then you as a creator, or as a community, or as an asset creator, or an owner of data, you'll be able to choose from a huge array of platforms that all make your data useful in different ways. And that's pretty cool.
Love that. Do you have time for one more question? I know we're running short on time, but I want to tap into something you just said, if you have time for it.
Let's do it.
Cool. What do you see as the future of social media? How is all of the stuff that you just mentioned of decentralization and a platform that's the most beneficial for creators, and all the stuff that you're doing with like the just bringing the community element together, how is all that going to influence and change social media and what that looks like in the future?
It's a good question. I don't think that everything is going to be synchronous, right? I think there is power in asynchronous communication. There is leverage in it. You can record a video and then have millions of people see it for the next year. In synchronous world, so you can have an interaction and record it and then put it in space for people to consume asynchronously. And so I think that the nature of asynchronous platforms likely will evolve, but I don't think it's going to go away. You know, there's a reason that text, even within Topia, you can send text messages to each other, to the world within a private zone. And that is asynchronous, right? And then, you know, I'm not sure that everything is going to be Web3. And certainly the Web2 companies are going to put up a huge fight, because a lot of the value for these social media platforms is in the data. It's in being able to serve really targeted ads, because they have all of this data about you that they can mine. And so one of the ways we'll see that evolution is when it goes towards more synchronous platforms or mediums, a lot of the existing social platforms that are built on ad models are going to try to record everything you're saying, everything you're doing. So you think you're hanging out with your friend and you're talking, and that whole thing is being recorded and transcribed and being mined to serve you more targeted ads. One of the interesting technologies for Topia is that we are using peer-to-peer technology. So almost every other metaverse platform is server-based. All of the data, all the audio and video, for all intents and purposes, is going through a server. They can record, they can transcribe. In Topia, all your audio and video is going through an encrypted tunnel between you and the other device. And so nobody can record, nobody can transcribe, super duper private. And, you know, we can't serve targeted ads, but that's not our model. That's the opportunity for new entrants into the social game, is that we don't have existing kind of unhealthy models that are going to force these companies to record and transcribe everything you do, because that's the only way they can improve their ad model. And so, you know, that's a big opportunity for us. It's something that I think the world is going to care about more and more, especially as we have more immersive technologies that are being used. You know, what if you have a headset on and they can just show you an ad right in your face? You can't look away, right? And they know exactly where your eyes are going at every moment, you know? So we're going to have to be kind of careful about these invasive technologies, how we're being recorded, when we think we're just like having a casual conversation. We're not like being really thoughtful about what we're typing, because we know it's going on our wall that everybody's going to see. We're just having a conversation. That's kind of more invasive and a little bit more dangerous. And so something that people should be thinking about, and hopefully voting with their feet towards the platforms that are preserving the sanctity of their privacy when they're hanging out with their friends.
Yeah, super interesting. I've heard some platforms, or like Brave Browser as an example, if you're familiar with them, where you have the option of sharing your data or not. So it can be completely private, or you have the option of sharing. And if you choose to share and choose to see ads, then you get like paid in their token for interacting with some of the ads. Like, did you consider that as a revenue model and as a way of like play to communicate, or however it would be, you know, however it would be built in. Did you consider that, or did you want to just steer away from that and make it like purely private 100% of the time to preserve that for people?
You know, it's interesting. We actually do have a hybrid model. So we have the server-based thing as well that you can switch into if you want. So we could go down that path, but you know, most people are connecting through peer-to-peer encrypted tunnels. And you turn the entire world. So the world owner decides which one it's going to be in.
Gotcha.
And then you can even decide for yourself. So if you broadcast to 1,000 people at once, you're going to be in the server-based mode. That's mm-hmm. how that works. Because in peer-to-peer, you're creating mesh networks, basically, which is really cool technology that we don't have time to get into right now. But the point being that consumers should be able to choose. Brave is super cool. You know, you should be able to have the ability to go in a server-based mode, knowing that you're being recorded. Maybe you want to be recorded. Maybe you want to record whatever you're saying.
Sure. Right?
There's a lot of use cases for that.
Yeah.
Maybe you want to make money from the platform and get paid to be served ads. Great. I think that kind of makes sense. Where it doesn't make sense is where you don't have any choice and you don't even know that it's happening often. We only know that, you know, our data is being mined right now because there were huge leakages, right? and Prism, and, you know, there was mm-hmm. a big uproar around it. We weren't just told that by the companies,
right.
You know, because that's not really how it works. So with something like Topia, with peer-to-peer, it can't happen. And I think that there's a lot of power in that for consumers to be able to trust in the technology and then be able to choose for themselves how they want to interact, how they want to be recorded, how they want to be monetized, essentially, right? And maybe they pay in, maybe they get paid to be shown ads. There's a lot of different models that are quite interesting.
Fascinating. Love it. I feel like I could keep asking you questions, but appreciate the time and all the stuff you're sharing. Where is the best place for people to find you, Daniel?
So you can go to topia.io. That is our homepage. We have all of our socials at the bottom. You can also create a world, create a demo world. You can have up to 25 people at a time. And you can play around with it, try out the different templates. It's literally a URL, so you can just send it to your friends, to other people in your company, just bring them all in. It'll probably blow their mind if they haven't used something like this before. And you can find me on Instagram, I'm Explore Magic. On Twitter, I'm D. Liebeskind, which maybe we can put in the footer of this because yep. my last name's kind of hard to spell. You also can reach out to team@topia.io if you're a business or you're a big enterprise and you're interested in using this for a business case, or if you're a community and you just want to check it out, or you're just an individual and you are like, hey, I want to like throw my podcast episodes in there or whatever, feel free to hit us up.
I'm excited to go in there and explore Topia and see what I can create, who I can connect with. That's going to be fun.
Amazing. Thanks
awesome.
For having me on, Mark.
Yeah, thanks for the time, man. Appreciate it.
Hey guys, thanks so much for listening. And just a quick reminder that I do have a link in the show notes for $60 off your VIP ticket to NFT Seattle coming up the weekend of September 30th and October 1st. I've been investing a huge amount of work into putting this together, and it would mean a lot to me if you guys supported and came through. And I would just love to generally meet you guys in person. So I hope you can make it. Link is in the show notes. Talk soon.